Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
It was zero pay, and then I had to work, and this was a requirement of it. I had to work study hall 6 to 10 at night for all the athletes on campus, you know, checking them in and out for 10 bucks an hour. So my pay was, you know, I was getting about 160 bucks a week doing the study hall thing. But other than that, everything else was volunteer for that first season.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by T. Butters, assistant head coach at Charleston Southern University. T is another name on a long list of Clemson managers who have gone on to have successful coaching careers. And the thing that makes T unique is his personality, his people skills, and his ability to connect and build relationships. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody say anything negative about T. He treats people with respect and has the ability to spark a relationship and conversation with anybody, anytime, anywhere. T's loyalty has paid off as he has stayed at Charleston Southern for 6 years and has been promoted from volunteer video coordinator to director of operations to assistant coach and now to assistant head coach. I hope you enjoy our conversation. T gives us some great insight into his coaching journey and his thought process for staying put at Charleston Southern. We also talk about the culture that they've been able to build at Charleston Southern, as well as some things they look for on the recruiting trail, and much more. Please write us a review. Please subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends. And please follow along with what we are doing at risingcoaches.com. Before we get into today's episode, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Rising Coaches Association. Since 2010, Rising Coaches has put on unbelievable events, and people would always ask us, how do we get involved with Rising Coaches? What can we do to help the cause? And to be honest, we never really had a good answer, until now. Sign up today for the Rising Coaches Association and become a part of our community and our network. You will receive exclusive content, and you will make genuine connections to others in the coaching profession that will help you both personally and professionally. Visit risingcoaches.com/membership and sign up today. T. Butters, what's up, man? How are you?
What's going on, Gordo? It's good, man. Good to hear from you. Good to talk to you. How you been?
Great. Yeah, I'm doing great, man. I appreciate you being on the podcast. I know you're on the road recruiting right now, so thanks for calling in from the car to talk to us today.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no doubt. I'm excited to talk with you. You know, I listen to the podcast when I'm on the road and traveling, and you know, I tell you if you didn't do a good job, but I enjoy all the podcasts and the guys you've had on there, so I'm honored to speak with you today, and hopefully somebody out there can learn maybe one thing from what we talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's jump in. T, first of all, we'll tell everybody we know each other from back in the Clemson days. You started off as a manager there.
Yep, that Clemson connection.
Yeah, you were one of the many people to come out of the Clemson basketball world and go on to have successful coaching careers. And you were there with some legends. I think you were there. Were you part of the Will Sarton era?
Yeah, Will Sarton. That's kind of how I got started, shadowing Will and Trey Meyer and Joe Matthews. Those were kind of the three guys I got introduced to right off the bat when I got in there, and just went from there. Will Sarton I saw him at Peach Jam actually this summer. He's still a great friend and one of the best, probably the best manager ever to come out of Clemson.
Yeah, and Will, people probably don't know that name, but Will is like behind the scenes and runs like all the EYBL stuff. He runs like the Jordan camps, the Chris Paul camps.
Absolutely.
Like he is making moves behind the curtain, as always.
No doubt about it.
So, all right, just real quick with your background. Obviously, you have some family ties to athletics. Your grandfather was the athletic director at Duke.
Yep.
What years was he there? Do you know?
So he was there. I'm going to be wrong, but it was mid. He started as the baseball coach there and then became the athletic director mid-70s. He was there for 20 years till like the mid-90s or so.
And was he the one that
long, not good while.
Yeah, he hired Coach K, right? And
Yeah, so he hired Coach K, and then, you know, got the death threats and the you need to fire Coach K after the first couple of years and kept him on. So, you know, that whole story with him. And so that's actually where I kind of got started in athletics a little bit, you know, just growing up in Durham and being around. We lived right there. I grew up there my whole life, being around that program and Coach K and Duke and all those guys and the Final Fours and the Cameron Indoors and all those memories, you know, of my childhood. A lot of it had to, you know, revolved around Duke basketball.
So why Clemson?
So, you know, I looked at Duke. I looked at North Carolina, which probably would have got me kicked out of the family. But I just wanted to get away a little bit. And I had my best friend, his sister was a swimmer at Clemson. And, you know, you go to Clemson one time and it's, you know, you like fall in love. Everyone says, you know, it's cliche. Everyone says there's something in the, you know, there's something down there that it draws people to it. And, you know, I went to visit her for a weekend and said, hey, this is where I'm going. I applied, got in, and never second-guessed it, enrolled, and the rest is history.
Yeah, and so that's interesting. You kind of wanted to get away from the family a little bit, get away from home and experience probably the college life. And really, you know, you really haven't used – I know you always lean on, you know, your family and your connections and stuff, but you really haven't used any of those connections to get you any jobs. Everything you've done has kind of been self-made, and I think as people hear your story, they'll realize – you know, of course, that was a great resource for you, but I don't think it necessarily landed you any big-time jobs or anything like that.
Yeah, no, with Coach K, you know, we still, you know, it's nice, obviously, having that he's a heck of a basketball coach and knows everybody in the business and influencer and does things the right way and family guy. I've been around him, you know, him and his family my whole life, and so, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I'm blessed to be able to have him as somebody you can get advice from and things like that. But I wanted to, you know, I wanted to kind of, you know, I didn't want to ride the coattails of what my grandfather had built. And I just kind of wanted to see if I could go out there and do it on my own and work from the ground up and put something together. You know, I still use Coach K and I call him from time to time. And he's given me some advice over the years just on some transitioning in jobs and trying to, we'll get there when I was getting out of the business and trying to get back into coaching and just some advice he had given me. But outside of that, and, you know, a lot of it is just from the start at Clemson and just working hard until, you know, until you land where you are now.
Yeah, for sure. So after your 4 years as a manager at Clemson, you eventually became the GA there. Was there a gap?
Yep.
Was there like a gap year, or did you go right into it?
So no. So I did the manager there, the manager spot there for the first 3 years was under Oliver Purnell. We were coming back from the Final Four, and I don't even think there was Twitter or anything back then. So maybe ESPN.com, and saw that he had left for DePaul, and so we're all anxious to see who was coming in to replace his coach, and we got Brad Brownell from Wright State. And so he came in, sat down with, you know, put his staff together, and then finally got down to the managers and introduced himself and told us what was expected of us for my senior year, and ended up getting the head manager spot that senior season, you know, make sure Coach Brownell had his Mountain Dews and, all the responsibilities that came with being the head manager. And so when I graduated that spring, in trying to find, you know, just like everybody else, you're trying to find what's the next spot. I wanted to be in coaching. I needed to find a spot. Sent emails out to people.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
but
go ahead.
You mentioned something important that we have to go back to. The Mountain
yep.
Dews for Coach Brownell and the large popcorn.
Yep.
Which would have to be like when would that have to be delivered and to where?
Oh, you had to have it ready to go. So he would have the game. If we were at home, he'd have normally, you know, Wright State checking in on them. He'd have them queued up in the film room before our game, just watching it. So you bring the popcorn maybe 45 minutes before tip, popcorn, Mountain Dew to coach in the film room. I remember being – this is funny. We were on the road in Iowa, and I brought coaches his Mountain Dew, and I brought him his popcorn. And I think – who would have been with us at the time? Earl Wanecki and Rick Ray, I believe, were the assistants. And so they see me bringing that, and each one of them is like, well, can I get a Snickers? Can I get a
right.
Skittles? So I'm running around the concourse of up there at Iowa trying to find all these snacks for those guys. And and bring them down to them. And, you know, that manager spot, it was awesome. It's a lot of hard work. The Clemson one is great. You know, you get some money on the side. You get an awesome experience. You're around all those guys that we still talk to today, either the players or guys like you and Andy Farrell, and, you know, all the guys you get to build relationship with. It was a priceless decision to, you know, go in and actually be a manager and do that.
Well, I brought up the popcorn thing because it reminded me there was one time, you know, I was the GA at that time where you were the manager, and we had a recruit on campus, or several recruits probably. And it was just one of those days where I never stopped running around. And it was also game day. And for whatever reason, I got so busy running around, I never like had a chance to eat lunch. And so it was like pregame, and it was like pretty close to game time. Like, I think Coach Brownell had just finished talking to the team and maybe was heading down to the court. And I was like the last one to leave the locker room, and I saw his like large popcorn sitting there, and I was starving.
Went to town.
It was a big decision, but I was I was not strong in that moment, and I wolfed down like half of his popcorn. I was like, he's done with it. He won't eat it. Fortunately, I don't think he ever knew. But
I wonder if he still. I wonder if he still. You know, he still does the Mountain Dews and the popcorn and those things on the road, or if you know, before games, or if he doesn't do that anymore. Maybe Paula has him on a more healthy. His wife has him on a more healthy choice before the game. Who knows?
Paula's probably cut out the sodas for him or something. I don't know. but anyways, sorry, I digress. I just wanted to share that. I felt compelled to share that story. But obviously you did a tremendous job as a manager and earned their trust, and then you graduated, and then what happened to you?
Yeah, so I graduated, and two things. I first, you know, had to try to find a job, and then second, took a vacation with all my buddies, you know, graduated. And first thing was I went and sat down with Coach K actually in his office right after I got done with school. You know, I'm sweaty, I'm nervous. I'm going in there dressed nice, and, you know, sitting down with him in his office for an hour to talk about kind of my future and, you know, how I can get a spy, what I need to do. And he just, you know, gives me advice. We talk for an hour. He says, you know, the biggest thing was that you want to get on with a staff that not only, you know, believes in you, but gives you great responsibility and will trust you with that responsibility. Because, you know, as you do that work, that's how you're going to progress in the business. You're not going to just, if you go somewhere that is a, you know, easy, cushy spot, but you're not getting that experience, you're not getting those things, then, you know, it's going to be hard for you to advance in this business. And he said, if there's anything I can do, you know, put me down as a reference. If there's, you know, we'll help you get started at a spot. You know, obviously awesome meeting, great experience to be able to do that. And coming back from that vacation, I was talking about with my buddies, and Brownell calls and says, just the timing of it. It was, you know, 4 or 5 days later, and says, hey, we want you to be the GA here at Clemson. I'm like, well, that's awesome. He's like, do you want it? And I, right there on the spot, obviously no hesitation, I said, yes, I'll take the GA spot. And so then come back and get to work as the GA.
Okay, so you do that for 2 years. And then what, T? I mean, that's always like a nervous time that when your GA's ending. It's like a ticking clock
about to go
off. Yeah, so
actually, and I don't think a lot of people know this, I only did my first year as the GA there. You know, it's a 2-year program. I obviously don't have my master's degree. I didn't finish the program. I did 1 year. And it was a time in my life. My wife now, she's my wife now, girlfriend at the time, got a job, and she graduated from Clemson, got a job at Chapel Hill. I was debating what I think a lot of people around that age debate, whether, I listened to Jonah Bay's talk on the podcast. He did the same thing, whether the time constraints, the pay, the all the hard work and the grinding and all the stuff you do at that, you know, when you're first getting started, and really a lot of your coaching career, is it worth it, or do I want to, you know, be able to make money and have a more flexible schedule and do something like that. So I actually interviewed for a job in North Carolina as a financial advisor at Morgan Stanley, and got that job and took that job. So I completely removed myself from college basketball at that time.
And so how long did you do that, and like what did you learn during that time period?
So yeah, there's a few things. So I did it. I was there for about 2 years. I was coaching high school basketball on the side. So like, I don't know if that's a good combination to try to start off as a financial advisor and coach high school basketball. But you know, I had that itch, the coaching itch, and wanted to do something with basketball. So I did that for 2 years. And Lauren and I were getting married in May. And this is probably April. Final Four had just finished. The wedding's coming up in like 5 or 6 weeks, and I tell her, you know, hey babe, look, I think I want to get back into college coaching. And she already knew. She was like, I knew you wanted to do that. I knew that's your passion. Let's go for it. So I, you know, I'm blessed to have someone like her that was willing to jump back in. I don't think she knew, you know, what the salary was going to be from the start, but she was on board. But a couple of things from when I was at Morgan Stanley, you know, the hours are different. You're working 9 to 5. I'm on the golf course at 1 o'clock with clients. The money was very good. I made a healthy living, made a lot of money that, you know, was able to, you know, afford me to take a lower paying job when I got back in. So if anything, it assured me that like I could do something other than coaching basketball, but it also, you know, I had the passion for coaching basketball while I was there. Like when I went into work at Morgan Stanley at 9 o'clock, I was counting down until 4 o'clock when I could leave and go coach that high school basketball team. So it wasn't, you know, I didn't have a passion for the actual job, what I was doing. And so I knew quickly that getting back into college coaching, you know, it was probably 6 months in that I knew I couldn't do that the rest of my life.
So you and your wife make the decision that you're gonna go ahead and try to get back into college basketball. And so what happens? Like how do you maneuver that and actually get back in? Because that's a big fear for a lot of people, is like, once I get out, I won't be able to get back in. What do I do? And the answer is like, usually you're gonna have to sacrifice to do it. And I know that was kind of your case there. So tell us a little bit about how you got back in.
Yeah, you definitely have to make a sacrifice, whether it be, you know, I couldn't approach it with I want to get back to the ACC or the level of where I wanted to be or the pay. You couldn't look at it. You can't look at it that way once you get out. You just got to be willing to take a opportunity somewhere. And, you know, I wasn't going to put my family somewhere where, you know, it was a bad situation, but you're going to have to, you know, kind of take what you can get and use your connections. And luckily I had, you know, connections with you and Lucas McKay and Rising Coaches even, which put me in touch with Josh Snyder, who was a, you know, had been out there at the Rising Coaches Conference that summer. And they had a video spot here at Charleston Southern open. I also looked at a spot at Louisiana Tech as a GA. Mike White was there at the time with that Duke connection, you know. And then Johnny Dawkins also was a spot out in California. He was at Stanford at the time. But I, you know, the Charleston location, what I heard about Coach Radebaugh and that staff that was there at the time, and, you know, that was close to family still, that was the more logical move for my family at the time. But the pay, you know, the sacrifice that you talked about, Gordo, the pay, I can be honest, my first year, I made zero. I was the video guy. I made $0 as the video coordinator. My salary was zero.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, when you say video coordinator at Charleston Southern, I'm sure people are thinking, well, man, this guy got out of the business and
got a great spot.
Yeah, came right back in as a D1 video coordinator, but people probably don't understand that's a volunteer spot, or at least your first year.
Correct. Correct. It was volunteer, and I was working my first year, so I just got married. Luckily, you know, I'd had some money saved up from what I was doing before. And my wife had a good job, but it was zero pay. And then I had to work, and this was a requirement of it. I had to work study hall 6 to 10 at night for all the athletes on campus, you know, checking them in and out for $10 an hour. So my pay was, you know, I was getting about $160 a week doing the study hall thing. But other than that, everything else was volunteer for that first season.
And then the other thing I want to point out to you is, like, you mentioned it before, a lot of people do especially at that age, but really at any, all the whole your whole career lifespan. A lot of people doubt, I think, whether this is for me. Do I want to do this? Do I not want to do it? I think the difference with you, while you were at Clemson, maybe having those doubts, you know, most people, as they're going through that, their work suffers, especially the people that end up, the people that end up actually getting out. You can see like their work tail off as the season goes on, and you're like, man, that dude's checked out. And then they, you know, usually that person just kind of fizzles out, and you're like, oh, I knew they were going to leave. You know, that I think that was the difference for you, was you maintained, like you still grinded and worked your butt off the whole time. And it probably was a shock to a lot of people there at Clemson when you did tell them that you weren't coming back and you were going to get out of coaching.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was a shock to them. I think a big reason why, you know, when you're working for a good staff, when you're working for a guy like Brownell and all the guys you had on staff, and, you know, just how observing how, you know, how my grandfather was when he was at Duke. And, you know, I've just been taught to finish the job that you're at, not give up, not quit. So I knew that season I had to finish it strong regardless. You know, you're having doubts midway through, and, you know, you're kind of going back and forth on what you want to do. But, you know, working with you guys, I'd be letting you down. I would be letting Lucas down, and I'd be letting guys down that counted on me every day to, you know, handle my business in the office. And then, you know, you never know where that relationship might take you, even down the road if you do get out of basketball. Say you get out, you never know when a Dick Bender or a Brad Brownell, that relationship. So you want to always leave those relationships, you know, on the best foot forward. And if you put in that work and finish up strong, you can at least leave out of there with their respect and all those things that hopefully I did when I left Clemson.
Yeah, and even though that was like a volunteer video job where you're having to work a part-time job on campus, those are still really hard to get, and there's no way you get it if you hadn't.
Lucas McKay, Lucas.
And the great reference that you were able to get from Clemson because you did, you know, handle it the right way and finish strong.
For sure.
So after your first year, do you stay in that video role, or and they find a way to reward you a little bit financially, or is that when Josh left and you had a chance to move up to ops?
Yeah, there was some transitioning there. We actually had an assistant leave. And so I was in the video spot at the time, finishing up that first year, and we had an assistant leave. And Coach B.J. Mackey, who played at South Carolina, was on that staff, and Ahmad Smith, who's now an assistant coach at North Alabama, was still on that staff. They were the two guys that were left. You know, and I built a great relationship with those two guys. And so they went to Coach on, hey, let's take at least take a look at Butters on this third assistant spot. You know, so you're thinking, I've been there 9 or 10 months in the video spot. You know, if those guys got the faith in you for that third assistant spot, let's give it a shot. And so I actually did an interview with Coach Radebaugh while I was on staff as his video guy. He took me out to dinner with his wife and my wife, interviewed me, asked me all the same questions he would ask all the assistants that he was interviewing. And got down to three guys, and really two guys, and went a different direction with a guy from a junior college, just wanted the, you know, on-the-road experience and all those things that he could bring to the table, the recruiting relationships and such. But, you know, I was blessed to be in, you know, the final two or three for an assistant spot after, you know, just getting back in the business, you know, 9 months before that. But luckily, we did have a movement at our director of operations position, so he quickly slid me into that spot as his ops guy, which came with, you know, more money, more responsibility, all those things. That was a nice bump to finish off that season.
Yeah, you mentioned like the relationships that you build there on that staff, and that's definitely one of your strengths. Let's talk about now, like, some of the relationships that you built over the years, and that you were probably continuing to build at that time, from like your time working camps, specifically like the Duke camp and Brian. Let's talk about that relationship a little bit.
We can jump in. Yeah, so the relationship thing obviously is huge. I just finished up with Ahmad Smith and BJ, those guys. I got the job at CSU when I went down to interview. They were moving players out of their apartments. And, you know, I'm just down there to work camp and interview. And I'm actually out there helping them move their guys and putting in the work and moving couches and cleaning dishes and doing all those things. And from there, just sparked a great relationship. And I think they hopefully saw the work ethic that I was going to bring. But that those relationships, you know, the guys that you work with every single day are going to be the guys that help you, you know, in your career. It's nice to, you know, call guys and send letters and all those things, but the guys that actually see you and what you're capable of and your work ethic and, you know, how you relate to the players and all those things are the people that are in the foxhole with you on your staff. And then, you know, so those are guys that you try to build your relationships with. And Brian, who you mentioned, Brian Hodgson, he's an assistant at Alabama now. You know, working all the camps back in the day, the Clemson camp was a great camp to work. The Duke basketball camp is, you know, the best camp out there. I mean, it's an unbelievable camp. They have a huge camp staff. They've, you know, coaches from all over the world come work the camp. In my first year, I meet Brian Hodgson working that camp. And he was at a junior, he was just going to get started at junior college. That next year coaching out in Texas. You know, I didn't know him from anything. You know, we just hit it off and just started talking. And it's been a relationship that's carried itself all the way to this point from him at JUCO to up at Buffalo. And now he's down at Alabama, and he's, you know, one of my best friends in the business, one of my best friends out of the business. And you know, it's been great. Those camp relationships, you can find a lot of guys there. You know, even the Clemson camps, Gordo, we've hired and had a bunch of guys work those camps that are, you know, D1 assistants and ops and guys now that, you know, those relationships at camps, you can meet a lot of people.
Yeah, no question. No question. So, in talking about meeting people and, you know, I hate this word, but networking, I hate it because it comes off as being fake, or it's got that connotation at least. And I know you kind of feel a similar way about it, and you're less concerned with like meeting a bunch of people and more concerned with what cultivating those relationships and making sure they're quality.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can, you know, people say that there's all the cliches. It's not about who you know. It's about who knows you. You know, there's, you know, all the people that go to the Final Four with 400 business cards and they leave with zero and they think it's been a successful trip. You know, that's fine. You know, I've taken a different perspective. I want to build a relationship with guys like Brian Hodgson can help me more than any one of those guys at the Final Four that you exchange a business card with, or, you know, have a phone conversation with once a year. I mean, he knows what I'm about. He knows, my work ethic. He knows me as a person, and he can actually be a reference to my character and to my work ethic and all of those things. And so, you know, I like to find there's a ton of good people in the business, great people. But to meet those ones that, you know, I got similar values with, and share a lot in common and just really get to know those people and keep up with those people. It's a lot easier to have, you know, we say the same thing with our teams. Do you want to be, you know, 10 miles deep? We say 10 miles deep at 5 different things. Or do you want to be a mile deep at 50 different things? And I'd rather dig deep into, you know, 10 different people in the business than to just, you know, have some surface relationships with 100 or 200 people.
Is that how you recruit T? Like, do you have like 100 kids on your list, or do you have like 10 kids on your list?
It's the exact same way. So like my recruiting list right now will have like, I'll have like, you know, there'll be 30 kids on the list, you know, just in case. But there's 10 kids that I'm building, you know, meaningful relationships with, and I'm talking to them 5 or 6 times a week, you know, talking to their parents, going to visit them. You know, the other guys are just people you got on the paper to check out on film here and there. But you know, the evaluation process in recruiting is tough, and you don't want to make a mistake. And if you got a list with 100 people on there, you know, no one guy can really dig into 100 different people and figure out who's a fit and who's not a fit. And so, you know, why not invest, you know, more time and effort into 10 kids or into 10 coaches or into 10 friends or whatever it might be, or, you know, instead of trying to spread yourself so thin.
Yeah, no question. All right, let's talk about Brian a little bit. Brian Hodgson, who you mentioned that you struck up a relationship at the Duke camp, went on to be an assistant. He's came through the Texas JUCO ranks, went on to be an assistant at Buffalo, and now, as you mentioned, is an assistant at Alabama. And he's kind of like, they have a great staff dynamic, and Coach Oates does a great job of empowering him to just go out and get players. And so Brian's able to just focus. Now, of course, he does other things, and, you know, coaches, he's got a great basketball mind and scouts and all that. But he really is able to focus and lock in on recruiting. And he's obviously done an amazing job with that, given the success that they had at Buffalo and the level of talent they had there. And now he's doing it at Alabama. What if anything, is his secret? Like, what makes him – I mean, because he's, you know, just a, you know, quick example of some of this. He was getting kids at Buffalo that had ACC offers, you know, and you know, that was not out of the ordinary for them. So what – like, how was he able to do that? What, if anything, have you picked up from him on the way that he operates?
Yeah, for sure. You know, just knowing Brian, who he is, he's a hardworking guy. He's a loud guy. He's a personable guy. He's a relatable guy. I think that's one of the key things that, you know, is key in recruiting, is being able to relate to those guys. He's still young. He's still young and knows the game but he knows the culture and he knows what the kids like and he knows what, you know, so he, when he's striking up a phone conversation with these guys, he can relate to these kids and have conversations that aren't, you know, what do you eat for lunch? What are you doing tonight? You know, just these surface level conversations, you know, he can really relate to these kids. And then he grinds, man. He's on the road 22 days a month, every month when he can be out. I mean, he's using every day that he can possibly use to recruit. He's out recruiting, trying to find guys. And then he's the same with the relationships, man. He's just building relationships with, you know, the prep coaches and the JUCO guys. He's really been able to dig into some of the JUCO guys and connections there, and with his agent and with the guys that he's been introduced to through that JUCO realm. And so, you know, those relationships that he's built and how he's been able to do it. And then just like his persistence, like and the biggest thing for me, Gordo, when I first got the assistant job, which we'll get to, you know, I was the first kid that said, I'm not interested or I don't want to come there. It was like, oh man, what did I do wrong? What did I, you know, you're second guessing yourself. Like, could I have done this? And Brian is just, you know, if you don't want to come, here's what we're about. Here's what we're doing. If you don't want to come, I'll find another one. And he moves on. And so, you know, over my years, I've been able to grasp that same mentality. Man, you don't need to sell a kid and convince him he needs to be there. You want that kid to actually want to be at your school. And if they don't want to be there, then there's 100 of them more out there that you can go find that do want to be at your school. And so that was a good lesson he taught me, you know, first starting out as an assistant.
Yeah, no question. The best thing they can tell you is yes, and the second best thing they can tell you is no, so that you can move on.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's hard, man. Your first time, when you get your first no, you know, you start reflecting on why and, you know, could I have done something better? But, you know, you learn over the years, and you learn, you know, through a guy like him that you just move on to the next one. And really, that's how it is nowadays. You just – if they're not interested, they tell you that no, keep it going.
Yeah, no question. I think the other thing that Brian is really good at, he's a really, really good evaluator. Really good.
He's got one every year. He always gets the one Hodgson special. That's a two-star non-rated kid that nobody knows about that has, you know, maybe one Big South offer and nothing else. And he goes to Buffalo and he's 18 points a game and he's overseas now as a, you know, pro player that is, a, you know, they had studs there at Buffalo. I mean, he had some big recruiting classes and he had some guys that were highly recruited, but he, you know, every year there's one guy that is like, who is this kid? Where'd he come from? And how is he first team all conference in the league? And he's able to find those, you know, one of those guys every year.
What do you look at when you recruit and try to evaluate kids, T? I know everyone's different and you got to recruit to your boss, but just what are some things that, you know, as you're watching a game and you're looking at a kid for the first time, what are you trying to notice for you?
For me personally, the first thing and we talk about this as a staff now, it's kind of been something we've taken on, but this is just something that I noticed after the first year. So I need to find something that kid does at a, you know, mid-major plus or a high major level. So if, you know, if we're recruiting a kid and he's, you know, low major all across the board, or he's, you know, he's just a solid guy at this, they tend to not be able to come in and do what we need him to do. If there's a kid that has, you know, any high major attribute, I'm looking for, you know, if his athleticism or if his, you know, if his motor is high major, if his shot's high major, if there's something about him that, because we're not getting a kid that's a finished package, but if he has one thing that he does great, and then, you know, we can work on all the other things. At least, you know when he's coming in, what he's capable of. And we do a good job, and Coach does a great job of putting guys in positions to, you know, exploit their strength. And so if you can find one thing, you know, that he's good at and go from there. And then, you know, we're big on, you know, the character and the body language and those things. We're not taking any kids that are you know, if you're yelling back at the coach or arguing with, you know, doing all that crazy stuff, you know, those kids are hard to coach, and, you know, they might be talented, but over time they start to wear on you and your program. And so, you know, the first thing we look for is can you do something at a high major level? And then I try to find, you know, what's your character about, what's your effort, and are you a good teammate? Those type of things fall in line. And, that's kind of how I've approached it.
And you guys do something unique there at Charleston Southern. You guys recruit kids as a staff, right? So you guys are all recruiting every kid that's on your main list, at least.
Yeah. So we do that both scouting reports and recruiting. Everybody's involved in the scouting report. We all each have a different aspect. So you're involved every game. And then recruiting wise, the whole staff recruits. So you have a state for younger kids, so I have a couple of territories that are mine for younger kids to try to get them up on unofficials. But once we make our board, and we got our 2020 and our 2021 board up right now, you know, you have a list of your 15, like I said, 15, 20 guys, and you and we rotate through. So, like, I could call the point guards this week. Coach Nimley, who's joined us this year, could call the wings, and then Coach Duckett could call the bigs, and we'll rotate week to week. You know, even going to see guys, I had to be at practice a week or two ago. We had a kid that I liked that I went and saw and offered, and I couldn't get out to see him. So we just sent Coach Nimley, who's talked to the kid already 15 or 20 times, to go see him. And it's made it easier from that standpoint. And then from the turnover standpoint, at the end of the year, if you lose a coach, there's not a lot of hesitation in that kid, because he wasn't recruited just by one guy. He knows the whole staff. Everyone's been talking to him every week. And so it's worked out great for us. You got to keep up with a few more kids because, you know, you got the whole board instead of just having a handful of them. But like I said, our board isn't huge. We're not having a 50 kid board or something like that.
Yeah, I love that. I also like it because it, you know, my guess is, you know, if you have a really good staff, this isn't an issue, but a lot of times you're going to have staffs where people get territorial about, this is my kid, this is their kid. And then once those kids are actually signed, it's like, you know, put in my kid and play this dude and don't play that guy.
Right, right.
So it probably and it squashes all that.
It does. There's no, you know, that's probably one of the biggest things in our business. And even when I was young, I thought that way. Like, you know, I want credit and validation for the work that I'm doing. And you know, I'm putting in all this work, and I want Coach Brownell or Coach Radaball or Coach Grant or someone to see that T Butters did this, you know, and get the credit for it. And that's going to help me get the next spot if I get all this credit. But it's, you know, that's all been washed here at CSU. That's not, you know, there's no credit for this. You know, if everybody works hard, you know, we're worried about the relationship with the kids, bringing in the kids, and if there's no anybody looking out for themselves, has been able to work a lot better. And you know, you miss a lot of those problems that I'm sure a lot of staff and stuff are having.
Yeah, no question. Okay, let's get back to your journey a little bit. You got passed up for the assistant job. I don't know if you could really call it being passed up because you had just gotten there. But I'm sure that's still hard. I mean, I'm sure you still get excited about opportunities. I'm sure you're telling yourself you're ready for it.
It was tough. And I just real quick, Gordo, you know, this is the biggest thing that I've learned. We hired, this is off target just a little bit, but it'll all draw back in if you stay with me. We hired Dylan Thompson. He was a quarterback at South Carolina, was working with the Patriots organization, and they wanted him to come get some experience with, you know, a college program. And then he was trying to get a front office job, and he's now with the Detroit Lions. And we brought him in, and he's a big culture guy. He's their character guy up in Detroit. Yeah, good friend, still talk to him. But we came up with this thing when he was there, that was, the acronym was TELID, T-E-L-I-D. And it stood for treat every day like it's Duke. And we went back to that Duke formula. And so it was like about, you know, being prepared, doing the best in your job that day. If you have a scouting report due that day and there's misspelled words, you wouldn't turn a misspelled scouting report into Coach K. So why would you turn one into Coach Radebaugh? You know, they're both your boss. They're both head coaches at the D1 level. So that's the acronym that we approached everything with. So when I was the video guy, I put in work just because you're in the video spot. You know, you can't go out recruiting and you can't go call recruits, but you can, you know, you're watching recruiting videos as they come in, the staff sending them to you to download them and all that thing. And so what I did as the video guy is I put together a database of the next year, the senior class and the junior class guys in South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, like the surrounding areas, as the video guy, just in case, and had that list ready to go, prepared. And so, you know, you treat, and people say dress for the job that you want, but it's really more of, you know, doing on a day-to-day basis what that job entails. Like you can dress up like you're an assistant coach, but are you doing the things so that when your time comes, you're ready to do it? And so as the video guy, I was doing all those things. I was heavily involved in the scouting reports. One of our coaches had a death in the family, and so he had to take a leave for a week or two, and I actually had to fill in his role a little that year. So I was heavily involved, and so when that time came to interview for it, I thought I was ready. And getting passed up was difficult, but, you know, it was just putting me, you know, I knew Coach believed in me, and I knew, you know, when I got bumped up to that ops position that, you know, it was a spot I was going to go to temporarily, and then when another assistant spot came open, you know, I'd be able to get onto his staff. So that's kind of how that all went down. I know that was a lot there. I know I jumped around, but you know, that's kind of how I approached that situation.
No, that's great insight. And I think it's so easy to – once that happens, once you get passed up for an opportunity, you know, become disenfranchised and start looking elsewhere to go. And I'm sure you had opportunities to leave Charleston Southern for, you know, maybe higher paying ops jobs or different right. positions here and there. But you stuck with it. I mean, how long have you been at Charleston Southern now? What year is this for you?
This is my sixth year. So I did one as the video, two is the operations guy. He bumped me to the third assistant, and then he bumped me up to recruiting coordinator, and then this year he's bumped me to assistant head coach. So, I'm, you know, every year it's a new title, a new, you know, not that the dollar amount matters, but it's a pay bump. I say the dollar amount doesn't matter, but it still does. You still like to get, you know, paid for what the work that you're doing. And, you know, so it's been bumped up every year. And, you know, you mentioned the job opportunities, and, you know, when I was the ops guy, you know, I still had to approach it with that same mindset I had at Clemson. Like, I'm still here now. This is where I'm at. You know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. Let's put the work in here. We just come off a championship. You know, my video year, energy was good. The culture was good. You know, so it was easy. It was easy to put that work in. But you did, you know, you had other opportunities, and, you you know, bounce some things off, you know, some guys in the business that I trust in and have relationships, like Coach Grant and at CFC and, you know, Coach K and stuff like that, and get their feedback and, you know, stay put. And it's turned out to be a pretty good decision for me.
Yeah, no question. I would say so. T, tell me a little bit about what you guys have built. You mentioned, you know, you guys won a championship after your first year at Charleston Southern. Coach Radabaugh has done a tremendous job building that program. He's been there quite a while. Tell us a little bit about what makes him unique and the culture that he's built there.
Yeah, no doubt. He would tell you himself, Gordo, we talk about this all the time. His first few years here at CSU didn't go so well, not how he planned. He was focused on the results, and it just didn't go as he planned. And over the past 10 years, he's kind of made a shift into the culture of the program. And, you know, I know the culture thing is huge. So we kind of, you know, he's been digging into that. And ever since the championships and all those things that we've done over the past few years, has been culture-based, loving your kids. It's how he is as a boss. It's how he is as a person. I know we've talked, you know, a bunch of times about it, just how, you know, I work for somebody where you can, you know, you're not always looking over your shoulder. You know, there's no office hours. You're not punching a clock. You're not working until 12 at night. He holds you accountable. He expects you to get your work done. He expects you to give your best effort. I mean, it's the same thing he does with our players. He loves you to death. And so it's provided like a culture that's unbelievable. If you come and see our facilities and some of the things we have, I mean, we're growing and we're progressing, but I mean, with our culture is what really has been able to sustain the coaching staff and the players. And it starts with him. And, you know, I'm blessed to be here with, I tell everybody every year, you know, when, you know, first of all, he's bumping me up every year and giving me more responsibility, but, you know, the culture, the family life, my wife's around, my son's out on the court running around with the players, you know, they can hop on the bus and go to games. And if he's got a doctor's appointment, coach will kill me if I miss something of my son's, for a meeting or for something that, you know, doesn't mean a ton. And so that's, you know, it's a big thing for me, you know, because obviously, you know, it's a tough profession. It's a profession that can wear on you. And so I tell young guys all the time, getting in, make sure you find a guy like that. If that's something, you know, if you're single, Gordo, you can grind it out and do some of that stuff. But with a family and with a, you know, kids and all those things, it's nice to work for a boss like Coach Radabaugh. And so, don't settle. You know, I know it's hard. You're trying to find a spot. You're trying to get your foot in the door, that type of thing. But, you know, I'd rather make less or be at somewhere that's perceived as, you know, smaller level wise or whatever it may be, to be with a guy that promotes your family and, you know, your life outside of just basketball.
Yeah, very much family oriented. And I'm sure without that relationship with Coach that you have, maybe you would have taken some of those opportunities earlier in your tenure
for
there,
sure,
at Charleston Southern, but
for,
because you do
sure.
have
I
mean, such a great boss.
Yeah, yeah, that's been. I'm sorry to cut you off. That's been a, you know, because people ask, you know, like people that don't know anything about the business. My sister's in Maryland. But family that's not in the business are always asking, like, hey, when you getting a job at Duke? When are you gonna coach at Duke and all this stuff? And I'm like, well, first of all, that's not how it works. And second of all, there's a lot of jobs out there that might pay more, or people would say, you know, it's a no brainer to take. But, you know, that's one of the top few things on my list, is that how that culture is and how the coach, you know, that relationship and the way he handles those things. 'Cause I don't want to strain my family or, you know, strain relationships and things that you don't have to, just because, you know, some coaches think, and there's no right or wrong way. There's coaches that like the grind and you know, go in the office and be in there all the time and stay late and come early. But, you know, I can make recruiting calls right now on the phone when I get off with you. I don't have to sit in the office to do that. And I got a boss that realizes that. And if you handle your stuff, which, you know, you handle your stuff the way you're supposed to and work hard. And I think that's the way that I'll hopefully be able to run my programs one day.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong way to do it. And there are coaches that love the grind, so to speak. But there's also coaches who are divorced or have poor relationships with their families. And it
No
seems like
doubt.
Coach Radabaugh is very much, in line with the belief that, family is the most important thing in your life. And the basketball
Absolutely.
stuff's important too. But,
Absolutely.
it doesn't trump your family and your relationships. And it
Yeah, I mean,
seems.
and it's. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it seems also like, you talk about fit being so important in anything really, but especially college athletics. It seems like he's really found a great fit with the university, with Charleston Southern, because, it's very much a value-driven school, and that family atmosphere
For sure.
is more important than
It
anything
fits
else
them.
there.
He fit, I don't know which one fits. He fits the school or the school fits him. I mean, it's a Christian school, and he can put, he can put his faith first and then his family right after that. And he allows his coaches to do that. And then same thing in recruiting, man. Like, basketball is not the top thing on our priority. So it's like it all just fits together. Is, you can't say, hey, the coach is about fan, we're about this, but then, you're all basketball all the time with your recruits and with your players. Like, it all fits. It's a, it's a structure that he's had success with. And, when you're doing what, if his grand, he's got a granddaughter, he's got kids, if they got things going on, and he's not going to miss important things, like things he has to do basketball wise for something silly. But if there's something important in their lives, he's going to that thing. And, you see a lot of coaches starting to do that with at Clemson with Dabo Swinney. He's the same way, with the culture and with the family and that atmosphere. And, it just makes the environment, like, you go into work wanting to work, 10 times harder than, you probably get more out of me not grinding me every day because I want to work for you and get that stuff done than if you came in and said, I need this, do this by this. You're always over my It's refreshing to have someone like that that can just, let you get, let you go to work. So it's been great.
Awesome. Good stuff, T. Well, listen, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today, and obviously we'll continue to root for you guys the rest of the way and follow your career. Where can people follow along with you, T, like whether it's on social media or anything else?
Yeah, I'm not a big social media guy. I'm on Twitter, obviously, for the recruiting stuff. I think I'm at Coach T Butters on Twitter. And then if anybody, Gordo, if there's anybody, I mean this sincerely, if there's anybody out there that listens that would like to get in contact, I can give them phone number, email, any of those things. My email is on our school website. Just reach out. I try, anybody that we can help that is listening.
Thank you.
With Rising Coaches, I want to help out. So,
Yeah, man. Get you a cough drop. Be safe on the road.
I'm struggling.
And thanks again, T. We appreciate you.